PGA DFS fans, what is going on? It is not Tuesday afternoon. In fact, it is Monday evening here. But we are on Olympics time this week, heading to Tokyo for this week's PGA DFS contest, as 60 golfers have assembled in Tokyo, Ben, for this week's contest. And a couple of wrinkles already thrown at us. But before we get into that, we're going to talk about the sponsor of the show, Monkey Knife Fight, for a bit. And in case you guys are new to the show, or maybe new to the PGA DFS realm, well, try out Monkey Knife Fight, because their player prospect-based contests are easy to play, and they don't require the time commitment that other DFS sites do. In order to be competitive, you don't have to worry about ownership or anything like that. And of course, they have all of your favorite sports to choose from, NBA, UFC, well, NBA is done now, I should say, UFC, PGA, esports, soccer, and so much more. We're going to give you an example of some of the types of player props that they give. Now, when I was looking earlier, Ben, there's this European Tour event going on right now. That's what they have posted. Maybe they'll wait for the Olympics to come. But nonetheless, a couple of our favorite names over there, Lori Cantor and Jordan Smith. We're just going to give you the example of what the prop is. This week, it's 17 and a half birdies or more. It's a more or less. You got to pick on each side of them. If you get both right, you get 2.5x your buy-in there. So I'll go over that real quickly again. You're just going to pick more or less birdies on Lori Cantor and Jordan Smith this week. 17 and a half is the number. If you get both right, you're going to win 2.5x your prize. So, Ben, any quick notes about that before we go into Kazameki Country Club?
Well, I'm not going to give a prediction on Lori Cantor's birdies, but I will say, as we've talked about a lot with Monkey Knife Fight, it's a different way to get exposure to a lot of the things we're talking about. And you're playing, you know, with those prop-based contests. It's the same research. It's quick. It's easy. And that's one of my favorite things about it. It's not like you have to do all this extra work. You can take what we are doing for some of these other sites, and it just gives it a different spin. So that's something I really do recommend.
Yeah, last week we talked about how easy we thought the course would be. Now, when we have a lean like that, it's good. It's a way to take advantage of some of these maybe arbitrary, if you will, information that we don't have. And I'm going to mess up the name, probably the spelling of this country club, Ben, that we're going to go talk about right now. It is the host venue of the 2020 Olympics, even though we're in 2021. Kazumagaseki. How's that, Ben? Does that sound better for you? Par 71, 7,400 yards. A couple of notes that I wanted to run by you here as we try to develop a strategy or a building selection, if you will. The par fives, they're long, Ben. 640, 620, and 590. 590 maybe is reachable, but certainly the other two are deep. Also, par threes, relatively long as well. All over 200 yards. There's a 240-yarder in there as well. But when you get to the par fours, I've got about six that are going to give you a wedge or less in. So I think I've got the winning score somewhere around 13 or 14 under, Ben. But it's really going to depend on the green speeds. It's bent greens, so they can rev them up as fast as they'd like.
They're also gigantic greens. They're yes. Huge complexes. So we're going to see how tricky they are. It's tough, of course. Have I ever seen this course? Absolutely not. Do I know anything about it? Not really. The courses that came to mind, Firestone was what stood out to me. Thinking about it, it's long, difficult, undulating greens, things of that nature. I don't think it's going to be super hard, but at the same time, you mentioned some of the challenging distances. I believe it's Tom Fazio. I don't know.
Tom Fazio redesign, yep.
Okay, so there you go. And he's done a lot of courses certainly here that we see time in and time out. So I like from what I see, I don't think water is going to play a big role, unlike what we saw last week. It looks like a pretty fair test.
Yeah, for sure. I like this course a lot. Now, had a question in chat. I did not know about the Dustin Johnson and the caddy thing last week. I was totally kidding. I just want to make that clear. I'm quite sarcastic sometimes on Twitter, and sometimes I don't make it clear. So it's a little hard to decipher, but okay, let's keep talking here. We're going to move on and talk about the Olympics now. Of course, I mentioned at the top, there are 60 players here this week. Before we move on, of course, I want to turn your attention to our free premium tools and data of the day. We're going to get MLB player projections. And with some games going on tonight, I'm sure there's still some showdown formats or even the late format to be able to go and check those out. A little sneak peek from behind the paywall. Now, with the 60 players, we've had a lot of moving parts. Sadly, John Rahm and Bryson DeChambeau tested positive for COVID-19 on Saturday evening, the day they were supposed to leave. But beyond that, John Rahm has got it for the second time in 2 months. I'm so utterly confused about that. I don't even want to talk about that because I'm sure I'll get myself in a little bit of hot water. So let's just talk about Jorge Campillo and Captain America. They will replace them. But Ben, it totally shaked up the odds. It shaked up everything when Rahm and DeChambeau were dismissed from the tournament.
It certainly did. And I do want to just give a quick update there. Not that it's a huge thing. I thought it was Campillo as well. It's actually Adrian Arnus who's going over.
No, he's already in it.
What? So there's three Spanish guys.
No, there's only two. Arnus and Campillo.
Oh, okay. That makes sense. Where's our
It was already Rahm and Arnus. Now Campillo got added late. I guess he was able to get all his tests in that he needed to do, and he'll be there.
So Sergio didn't want the
Sergio. No, Sergio passed, just like Kepka and Cantlay and a few others definitely said no to coming
here. Well, chat, you can see my contributions to the show so far. But yes, obviously two big names down. Reed, of course, but we're going to talk about this. I mean, it's not the easiest thing to suddenly on a whim fly to Tokyo after you've been playing in England and then Minnesota. So it's a big loss. The betting board, we've seen the odds been slashed across the board. It's pretty uncomfortable pricing now when you're looking at outrights.
Yeah, no, it certainly is. I mean, Morikawa's at the top of the board.
It's like 6-1, something ridiculous.
6 or 7-1, depending on where you're looking, which, you know, before that he was 11-1. We had Thomas and Schauffele at 15-1. Those were some pretty decent odds for a no cut, especially for Schauffele and Thomas, who have performed so well over here in Asia in the no cuts. You know, Thomas has 3 wins. We'll talk about that here in a second. So what we're going to do a little bit different here on the show. We're going to be building, as we talk about on the show a lot, we talk a lot about strategy, but something different we're going to add. We're going to actually build out a lineup with you guys here. We're going to build out two. We're going to do that at the end of the show after we've talked about everybody. It's going to be what we'd call your model GPP lineup, especially for this week with the $10. Going to have to leave some salary on the table to try and diversify. And then we're going to build what I would call a main lineup, which is one you'd put into, say, a cash contest, a $500 or a larger buy-in. So we're going to do that. And throughout the show, we're going to kind of lead you to how we get to our picks. So just wanted to make that clear, but we will now move on to our gold medal section. But of course, before we do, I told you about the free premium tools we have, but we've got so many more premium tools, especially for PGA. You can get pro plays, which is kind of our GPP rankings. We're going to be doing 1-60 this week. Or even how about just the player projections and ownership? With only 60 golfers in the field, ownership becomes so vitally important and condensed. So come on and join on the Osmo Plus side, just $8.95 for the week in golf. And of course, you can get 20% off. You can actually see it right there on your screen. 25% off, sorry, your first week of Osmo Plus Platinum by using the promo code PGA DFS Strategy there, or PGA Strategy Show. It's right there on the screen. If you guys just read it better than I could, we'd be in better shape. So right there on your screen, 25% off your first Platinum Pass. And we've got NFL starting and so much more. Ben, college football.
So I did a pod today. I do want to say a shameless plug for myself. Me and Matt Kaczewski have started a podcast, exclusively a podcast content, Betting You, it is called. And it is college football centric. It is available on all the podcast feeds, certainly part of the Osmo home here, but yeah, Betting You, go check that out as well, because the season is only like 40 days away, man. I cannot wait for it to get started.
Yeah, so you and Matt G, can you tell me what his last name pronounced? Kajowski?
Kajewski.
Kajewski, okay, not bad. I'll get myself. There he is. I was watching your guys' show earlier on that, so definitely check those out. We've got a lot of great content coming out. All right, now let's talk about the gold medal golfers. These are golfers that I think are in contention to win the gold. Hopefully the silver and bronze, if that was the case. And we're going to start right at the top with the American trio. Colin Morikawa, Justin Thomas, and Xander Schauffele. Now, Ben, I already mentioned how good Justin Thomas has been in the continent of Asia. 3 of his wins have come here. CIMB Classic. He didn't win the Zozo. He won the CJ Cup a couple of times. Xander Schauffele also been good over here at the WGC HSBC, just losing to McIlroy, a couple of other good starts. So, are you apt to go to the hot on the golf course Morikawa, or maybe a little bit more of the history angle with Schauffele and Thomas?
I'm going to get myself – I don't think I'm going to get myself into trouble, but I'm sticking with JT. I really like the spot for him. I bet him at 11-1. It hasn't been great, and it hasn't been all the putter. Certainly the putter has been problematic. He just didn't look great at the Open, But I like the setup here. I certainly looked at Quail Hollow a little when I thought of this course. He broke through there for his major, can handle it. I think he's built for a lot of different things. Listen, Morikawa, when he putts, he's actually, like most of the elites in the world, he's unstoppable because he's the best iron player in the world. He's also the top price golfer now, coming off a win where he's going to be very popular. Xander, I get it. I have no problem with him, but I do think I prefer Justin Thomas of the top three options.
Yeah. Now, Thomas, on the other side of Morikawa, has not got his putter going in quite some time. But now, the last couple of weeks over at the Open Championship and the Scottish Open, he changed his putter. It looked a little bit better. He just really couldn't get going, though, at the Open. He even talked about it. He said, you know, he went 72-67, which, you know, kind of got himself at least into the mix. But he talked about how he thought the course was gettable and just kind of couldn't get any momentum going. Now coming over here, no cut event. I do like him. 10,900 on DraftKings, Ben. You think that's a little too expensive, given that there's only 60 golfers and, you know, we don't have a ton of other talent at the bottom of the board?
Yeah, I mean, I do think it's a little pricey, but it's a product of, you know, it's a strong field, but it's not there's a lot of guys not here too. So certainly, you know, without Rahm and Bryson and DJ and some of these other guys, someone has to fill that void. So I don't have a problem with it. I think it's going to be depending on who your second man is. You've got six guys at 10K or above on DraftKings. The trick is going to be, if you pair them up, what are you left with and how low do you need to go? Because in a non-cut, you're going to need all six of your players to at least score. Not everyone has to be in that top 10 or anything, but you can't have a guy who just does nothing and hope to get it done.
Yeah, I'm totally agreeing there. And now, since we've talked about these three guys without speaking about ownership, let's go ahead and just take a quick little peek here at the ownership value, at the ownership projections. And this is a little sneak peek behind the curtain. Right now, we have Justin Thomas coming in at the lowest owned of those three. Xander Schauffele trending the highest. That kind of happens. I don't know why people just maybe like to play Xander a little bit more. All of them over 15%, Ben. That's absolutely no surprise. I think we're going to struggle to find many golfers under 10% owned that are priced above 9,000 or so. Maybe one guy, maybe Patrick Reed's the only one because he's kind of late to the field here.
Yeah.
Let's talk about, first, before we get to Captain America, let's talk about Hideki versus Rory mindset. Not maybe the golfer. We'll talk about the golfer after. But the mindset, it's obviously a big spot for Hideki Matsuyama, being the local favorite, Japan. He's played on the facility a couple of times as early as he was 12 years old. I think he was winning a tournament on that West course that they have here at Kazumaseki Golf Club. I'm going to screw that up. I'm sorry. Again, and clearly he wants to get the gold for his home country in Japan. And then you've got Rory, who could care less if he was here, or at least playing for the Irish flag that he's going to be playing under the streak, could care less, but feels that he needs to be here because golf is the Olympics and the best players should be here. So he's kind of his civic duty, if you will. So do you take the Hideki approach and say, hey, we've got some, you know, maybe a little added pressure? And for Rory, no pressure at all because he doesn't even want to be here. Who do you like better just on that mindset?
Yeah, I mean, it's tricky. Obviously, we're going to talk about mindset, and it's very hard to quantify, certainly not just with Hideki being, you know, the hometown guy. The South Koreans have their own pressure, and we're going to get to them. I do think, and who knows what Rory really feels, but I think when he gets there and he's in the hunt, and I think it will be important to him to do something that's, you know, a kind of a once in a lifetime. You only get a couple chances to get a gold medal, and this is a pretty good one. I think this is a good course for Rory. I think it's a good fit for him. I think he'll be ready. I like JT the most up top, but Rory at 10-3 seems pretty fair. You did mention that Reed will be the lowest owned of the six. I think that's going to be pretty clear. He's not playing well, and he's coming over from Minnesota.
Yeah, not only coming over from Minnesota, but coming over from England as well. But he kind of said, as we talk about Captain America, he said, anytime I'm asked to play for my country, I also believe it's my duty to be there. Rather than for Rory, who knows what country he's playing for this week, Reed certainly, when he gets that flag on his back, he certainly turns it up a notch, not going to lie. All right, now let's talk about the ball striking machine from Norway, Victor Hovland, coming in at 9,900. He's played, I think, as good as, say, Xander Schauffele lately, Ben. So the $800 price difference, is that an easier click for you? And say, an easier click to pair up with Justin Thomas, or do you think we're getting too aggressive going both those guys?
So you definitely can do it. Certainly one of the things, and it's only Monday, but I think one of the many reasons that you want to get, even if you just sign up for the week, to get our ownership projections. I'm super interested to see what Alex and you and the whole team has, because I think Hovland might be amongst the highest owned players on the entire slate. And I'm not saying that makes him, you have to go underweight, but it is something to really be conscious of with only 60 guys. So I like him, but I think I'm going to have to be pretty different if I do click his name, because he's going to be very popular.
Yeah, and I think people looking at the performance coming into this, the win at the BMW, obviously a great win there. The T12 at the Open. Now, for fantasy players, the T12 is all we really care about. But when we look at form, he was never involved in that golf tournament at all. He played well on Sunday to kind of get himself to that 6-under mark and get himself inside the top 15. Product of maybe a little bit better conditions on Sunday morning when he teed off. So, yeah, again, I like Hovland. There's only 60 players here. It's hard not to like him. But again, I think it is going to have a lot to do with ownership, especially when you got a guy like Shane Lowry right below him and Paul Casey, both playing really well, cheaper and probably less owned at this point.
I think so. So to me, I think there's going to be an element of sticker shock with Shane Lowry. He's playing really well, but he is like a mid 8K golfer in I think most people's minds. So I think that'll suppress ownership. I think it's warranted. He's a winner at Firestone. I know that's not the end all be all, but I'm going to stick with that theme throughout this show. Paul Casey's a ball striking machine. And it's funny, Paul Casey, you think, oh my God, these are giant greens. Like, how is he going to be able to lag from 80 feet? You know, the Masters are like that, and he never has a problem there. He has more of a problem with these short putts, and that's not something that I think is really calculated at this course. It's more, you know, can you avoid three putts from 50 feet? That's not his weakness. His weakness is just he's got a 4-footer and he misses.
Yeah, I don't know what all is.
It's disturbing. All
Sergio Garcia is in that kind of same realm. Last week, I can't tell you how many 5 to 8 footers I saw him miss, and I mean, look, he still put up 18 birdies, so it was a pretty good start, you know, but he could have done a lot better. Anyways, all right, a couple of more guys. Internationals, they round up the 9K section here. We'll talk about Abraham Ancer and Joaquin Niemann first. I actually think it's a pretty good spot for Joaquin Niemann. 9,200. I think this course is going to play on the easier side in terms of off the tee, which is going to just set him up. I like Joaquin Niemann a lot at 9,200. I'm finding it a lot easier to go JT Niemann in my lineups that I want to get two guys above 9K.
You're coming around on Niemann. Yeah, I mean, he's someone non-cut. He's the thing about him, I say this with a couple guys, and he's a little pricey, so it's hard, but you almost have two outs. If he plays great, well, that's good. You're going to want him. If he doesn't, he still scores so well sometimes that it doesn't matter, and he's still useful. And it's nice to have that secondary kind of, you know, safety net. Now, obviously, if he plays really bad, you're going to be in trouble when you're paying 92, but that's a risk you take with everyone. And I think he's in a pretty good spot. He's a good driver of the ball. His putter has not been a liability. It's really his chipping. And I don't think this is going to play overly difficult around the greens. So I'm with you. I have no problem going to Niemann.
Yeah, I think maybe the large green complexes will mitigate that a little bit. I could be totally wrong there. We'll, of course, have to see. Abraham Ancer. Maybe similar form to Niemann, had that T4 at the Travelers, both came in a T59 at the Open, both had a miscut kind of before that. So is it Niemann over Ancer regardless, or are you seeing something a little bit more given the course setup and everything else?
I mean, I think for most teams, I'll probably lean to Niemann. Ancer, I do like what he does. He hits a lot of fairways. He kind of knows his game. He's a pretty good bent putter. I just have a little more trouble with him in the sense that if it plays really easy, I think that really favors Niemann. I think that's how I'll probably differentiate it. If I think the winner might be 8-under, maybe that's more of an Ancer course, kind of hit your fairways, pepper your big greens, and avoid those three putts. So both useful. Prefer Niemann in a vacuum, though.
Me too. All right, let's get to the last guy here at 9,000. And if I mention Sung Jae Im, I have to mention Siwoo Kim. So we all know by this point, if we don't already, a medal will abstain them from military service. Now, they have to report by the time they're 28. At least that's what my research said. Now, there's been a great article posted by a Golf Digest writer go on golfdigest.com, read the article. The author, I think, is Daniel Rappaport. I think that's who it is. In any case, it's a very, very well-written article. He talks about two types of pressure on the PGA Tour. Opportunity pressure and avoidance pressure. Now, did he make these up, Ben? Maybe. I kind of like it. Even if he did, I'll run with it. And I'll say how he described them. He described opportunity pressure as guys that get into the mix, have a chance to win a golf tournament, have a chance to improve their status, things like that. That's opportunity pressure. Avoidance pressure is, say you need a cut to make the top 125, need a putt to make the top 125 to retain your job, or even say in Korn Ferry Tour finals to get inside that top 25 to get your PGA Tour card, or military service. If you need a putt to come in the top three of this event, well, that would be called avoidance pressure. This is how he kind of determines it. He would suggest that at this point, Sungjae Im has faced very little avoidance pressure. He's basically won on his first start on the Korn Ferry Tour. He came in second the next start, all but assuring his ascent onto the PGA Tour, which has gone pretty well. Siwoo Kim is the player's champion or a former player's champion. So these guys have won big time events. But this will be their first time with this type of pressure. Ben, are you looking at either of these guys this week, or do you honestly think it's too much? I also have a couple of notes on some other Koreans that are on the PGA Tour that maybe we didn't know about, like K.H. Lee. He won a medal at the Asian Games back in 2010, so he's good. And Sung, he who remains Kang, also won a medal at the Asian Games, so he is exempt from military service. So just thought I'd mention that. Both Sungjae Im and Siwoo Kim are not. They missed those Asian games and decided to turn pro at 17.
And Benny Hahn.
Benny Hahn, actually, he was mentioned in this article. Funny you mentioned that. He's thinking about possibly just becoming a U.S. citizen and now would not be allowed to go back to Korea. That's basically what happens. If you do not complete service, you're not allowed to go back to the country at all, period. It's kind of crazy. And for Ben Hanan, of course, his parents had won medals, so they didn't have to do it, which is crazy. Looks like B.A. John, I'm guessing, is trending towards becoming a U.S. citizen at this point. Yeah.
So getting back to these guys, so one other tidbit, I believe that Sungjae Im will have an opportunity in Paris.
He will. Well, as long as he's still there, which we think he will be, of course.
Yeah. This is it for Siwoo, though. He will not. So I do think between the two of them, obviously there's even more pressure on Siwoo Kim. I think it's, of course, it's hard to quantify. I think this narrative is going to be out there a lot. And I think a lot of people are going to overown them because of that. So it's not to say, oh, I'm going to blindly fade, but I think it is a lot of pressure. There, to me, there's much more pressure playing for your job or your status than there is trying to, you know, like you mentioned, those two pressures. I think this is a whole different ball game. And to me, if I have those guys graded out similarly to someone else, I will tend to go with the other guy because of the ownership and because of the unquantifiable nature of what they need. Now, you know, they won't quit. That's the one thing you get in their favor. They're not, if they start slow, they're going to grind because this is as important as it gets.
Yeah, that is definitely an element. If they are, say, in, you know, tied for 28th going into Sunday, I can guarantee you they will be as locked in as they possibly can be on Sunday trying to get it done. Speaking of Saturday, Sunday, Monday, whenever, I just want to make clear of the schedule for this week. We start at 6:30 Eastern Standard Time on Wednesday night. And believe it or not, Ben, I did a little research after I put out my tweet earlier asking what everyone thought we'd get for technology here this week. Believe it or not, we're going to get 9 hours of coverage every day, 6:30 to 3:30 in the morning, all day it's on, or all night, I should say. So it looks like, I don't know that we'll see every shot, but I hope we're going to get live scoring at least this week.
That would be nice. Yeah, that's a mystery in itself, but this is just a unique week. I think you have to treat it like that. You've only got 60 players. You've got a new course. You've got this Korean military service, some other narratives. Interesting situation, but yeah, looking at that 9K range, I like the upper nines much more than the lower nines where Sungjae is.
Okay, so as we finish up our gold medal participants, or at least guys that we think will be vying for them, did I leave anybody out that you think is in play for a gold medal this week? Pretty much anyone under 9K, do you think can get it there?
Yeah, I got two guys. I mean, there are some others, long shots, but I think Tommy Fleetwood, could win just because of his. Actually, I got three guys, two realistic and then one absolute clown. Mark Leishman is a guy that, you know, he could finish last.
But what happened? Can you tell me?
No, I don't have answers for you.
Because you know that he broke his putter and then proceeded to birdie the last three holes using his wedge, right, at the
Open? Maybe he found something. He's just someone, he comes out of nowhere. He's a winner. He's won the CIMB Classic. He can handle a long course. When you get the best of Mark Leishman, he can win in any field, majors, WGCs, no problem. So I don't mind that. And then I'm going to give you one guy as a very aggressive long shot. Thomas Peters came in fourth in Rio, and Thomas Peters is the type of player, again, when you get the good out of him, he's explosive, he can score, he's made three straight cuts. It's a reach, but again, you're talking 60, 80 to 1 in a 60-man field for someone like that. So do you see anyone in the eights or even lower that you think could actually be hoisting gold?
Not this week. I got to be honest. I think okay. you mentioned Tommy Fleetwood. He was the one guy that I can tell you for sure that no matter what medal he gets, if he gets one, will be the happiest person on that podium. Unless, of course, it's Sung Jae and Mercy Wu Kim. Yes. They might be more internally happy. Tommy Fleetwood will be the most outwardly happy person. There's no doubt about it. He's been adamant about playing here this week and enjoying it. So, yeah. Thomas Peters was the other guy that if this turns into a ball striking show where putting really doesn't matter all that much, you know, say the greens kind of mitigate the advantages there, you have to have him in your lineup. We'll talk about that as in our lineup building. He was a guy that I highlighted has to be, in my opinion, in that $10 lineup. If we're only making one, he's a guy that at 8,100 can get you that top five, can get you a medal this week from in that range. So let's talk about a couple of other guys. But Ben, before we do, I want to make sure everyone is liking this. Of course, we've got a couple of people in here tonight, more than a couple, and not that many likes. So bump up the likes for us. And of course,
help us out.
If you're not already, make sure you subscribe to our channel here. We're putting out content, short form, long form, every day. I've already put out my top five values for the Olympics here this week. And of course, you put out your show with Josh, that short form. So best way to get notified about them is to subscribe to our channel. So, all right, a couple more guys that want to talk about in this 8K range. First one is Cam Smith. He has not been there since the RBC, really April, Masters, RBC, those 2 weeks, back-to-back top 10s, non-existent since then. Maybe a little flash in the pan at the Open, Ben, T30. Can we get excited about Cam Smith again, or is it just a wait and see until we get that Ches Reavie type run of form again from him?
Yeah, I mean, Cam Smith, I do think it's not just because they're Australian, but he has some Leishman too that when he gets going, very dangerous, but we just haven't seen it. I worry about him off the tee in a situation like this. It's a weird range. To me, there's a pretty distinct drop from the nines to the eights. Like, no disrespect to Cam Smith, Corey Connors, Bez, and then these wild guys from, I mean, what a range, Fleetwood, Higo, Guido, Noren, Peters, Mackenzie Hughes. I mean, I don't know. I don't see a lot of stability. I know this is a non-cut, so you're going to get your four rounds, but these are a lot of boom-bust options to me.
Corey Connors is an absolute lightning rod with his ball striking. There's no doubt about that. So do you think that if Thomas Peters does well this week, all things being equal, Corey Connors should do well as well?
I think there are elements to that. We talk about correlation a lot on this show that, you know, just think about it logically. That's how I always try to do it. If we look at this course and we say, wow, ball striking is so important, well, then guys like Paul Casey get a big boost. But there are other guys who get a downgrade. So logically, you wouldn't want to pair them with Paul Casey because they're pulling different directions. Like, you know, think of tug of war. So when you don't know the course, I think you can build correlated lineups. And some of those guys, as you mentioned, like with Corey Connors, they pair up nicely.
Yep, for sure. He's the first guy that I've clicked in that high eights. Cameron Smith, we haven't seen it. Christian Bezuidenhout, we kind of joke sometimes about this stuff, but I think I'm serious a little bit as well. He needs to gain 10 strokes with his short game to be competitive here this week. Any week, really.
There's no doubt about it. The thing about him, this is interesting. I want to see the ownership because his best asset is stability. He's made six. He's got the longest made cut streak on tour.
Yep.
That doesn't mean anything now. We don't care about that. And he has a lot of 33rd, 37th, 23rd, 44th, 53rd. That's not going to really cut it in a field like this. You need a little more upside. I don't know if he can give that to you. As good of a putter as he is, he's so weak off the tee. To me, that's going to probably be, you know, a detriment. Maybe pair him with Cam Smith because they're similar in that regard.
They definitely are. I think really where it's going to hurt him is these par fives. They're overly long, and he's just not a good ball striker. That's the bottom line here for Bezuidenhout. So seems like we're on the same page there. But as we get into these low eights, we've got kind of these wild cards, Migliozzi, Higo. We've seen both of them. Higo win, Migliozzi a top five at a major. Both have some extreme upside. Both are, though, coming on a spot of regression. So is this a spot for them to pick it up? And interestingly about Higo, I was looking into the European Tour stats, and it's a small sample. They haven't played all their events over there, but Higo's really been doing a lot of work with his putter, Ben. Does that excite you, or does that make you a little bit more nervous, given that they've never seen this course? Greens could be super fast. I know when he was tearing up the Grand La Tenerife Open, the green speeds certainly weren't what they're going to see this week.
No, I think that Higo is, you know, obviously he's like old news now. Bobby Mack and all these other guys are the new toy of Higo. Seems like that win seems like a year ago, but
yeah, it does.
To me, he's someone that if you think the course is going to play easy, kind of like Neiman, that's a big boost. He can go low. He's aggressive, big time scorer. If it's grinded out technical, I don't really like that for Higo. No,
I'm going to assume that if it is a grinded out event, you're going to turn right to Alex Noren.
Oh boy.
Who's a bit of a enigma to us right now. The T4 at the Rocket Mortgage. You're like, all right, he's set up John Deere Classic. He's going to go tear that up and roll that into the open. Show us he can grind it out. And no, missed the cut in both of those. It's too volatile. I'd rather play Thomas Peters in almost every situation, especially given the fact that I think we're going to get a minus 13 or 14 winner. All signs, Thomas Peters for me over Norm.
Correct. I'm with you. As Chad already pointed out, like they knew I was going to mention Noren. I get it. I see it, but I think there's just, it's really hard to peg. So if ownership cooperates, there's a chance I get over, but if it doesn't, I'm okay just rolling those shares to some other people. I will also say, this is not important to anyone. The sunset in New York, because of these wildfires, the sun is like straight pink right now. It's one of the weirdest looking things I've ever seen, but a lot of weird things going on with the environment. I don't know what's going on in New York right now. Very shady business.
Yeah. You know, I always say to that, I always say, you know, as pretty as the sunsets are, it's probably as awful as it can be for the ozone layer, whatever it is. Who
it
knows?
Wild,
certainly not a climate guy
maybe
or
a sign for Noren. I don't know why it would be, but maybe.
I saw the sign for Alex Noren, I guess.
Let's go.
I opened up my eyes and I saw Alex Noren. I saw the sign.
Blind. That's what Alex Noren does too.
Mackenzie Hughes is kind of a better Alex Noren nowadays. The guy continues to perform in big spots. I would think that if the form is going to continue, a gold medal wrapped around his neck would look great. I don't think he can do that, but he seems like he can play in any type of event right now. Ben, I'm having trouble fading this guy.
Yeah, I mean, if he wins gold, I would assume that golf won't be in the Olympics in 2024. They'll just be like, all right, this is a mistake.
This was it.
Yeah,
we're
done.
Oh, that's great.
He shows up in majors. There's nothing that you can say about Mackenzie Hughes. He's, again, very, very erratic off the tee. Not nearly as good as the guys around him, you know. So, but he makes up for it with the short game. It's just a different type of player. There's no reason he can't be effective. He has shown time and time again at courses that are intimidating, he can handle them, and he makes up for it with this short game and putting.
Yeah, and we've got our buddy who's in our chat a lot, Mr. Tokyo Swan. He's saying that he believes that it is going to be a rather soft and wet course, which, oh boy, get the Rory McIlroy. Get those tweets going or get that play ready. But I think it just goes more to what we've been talking about, Ben, likely a low score, 14, 13 under, somewhere in that range. Don't expect it to be hard. So, you know, just taking that into consideration. Okay, let's go down into our bronze medals here. Now, all the golfers that we just talked about, I think are probably in play for silver. Actually, I want to bring up one other guy in this range who I think is probably a big talking point and is likely the highest owned golfer on DraftKings this week, rightfully so. will not get a practice round here. One of three golfers that will not have time. I don't know if he's flying with Patrick Reed privately over there, but certainly any hiccup in air flights, he won't make it. Talking about Jonathan Vegas here. This guy is on fire right now, especially off the tee, Ben. So is he in play for a medal this week in your eyes, Jonathan Vegas?
I'd say it's doubtful. He's been incredible. He's coming off another fantastic week where the ball striking has taken over. I have a feeling that this type of course is going to provide more of a challenge than he's really taken advantage of the 3M and the John Deere types. I don't think this is that. I think this is more of a major, a Wells Fargo, a WGC type course. And although he can lean off the tee, I'm not sure his short game is going to be able to get him there. So I get the play. It's going to be very popular. I'll play him for sure. I like him over Mito, but I have reservations at the same time about these guys.
Yeah, and granted, what do you do when you see a Vegas at 7,400, probably the best player in that range? I mean, we don't know too much about Rosner, and we'll talk about these guys. But what do you do with that? Good price, good value, highest ownership. It's a really tough combination.
I mean, you just said it. It's very, very difficult. Again, when someone is really highly owned, it doesn't mean you don't play them or you can't play them. It just means that you have to really focus in on how you construct the lineup amongst the five other players. And that's something that we've preached a lot because in a 60-man field, there's not that many permutations if you have a very obvious three guys. Like, you don't have 10 options at 6,500 and 66. You have two options, three options that everyone else is looking at. So I get it, but you just want to be careful.
Yeah. Okay.
Let's divorced on the show. That's what chat does to you.
Yeah. Well, chat's trying to get me to shave off all of my hair. I'm not sure why, Mike. You're going to have to talk to me about this. But I can assure you that if I shaved my head, the likely one of the top three qualities in which my wife married me for was my hair, obviously, as it's, you know, the most defining feature I have. So if I got rid of that, it would be trending toward a slippery slope. And not going to go there right now. I'm sorry, guys.
No, don't do that.
If I win the $10 this week, well, we're getting closer to being able to do that at least. But we're not quite there yet. Although we are going to try and help everybody, including us, try and win the $10 this week.
Someone's going to win the $10.
Someone's going to win it from this show. I've got that feeling. We're going to talk about some bronze medals. But before we do, in case you miss one of these shows in the future or any of our pre-recorded content, you can catch them on your favorite podcast provider. If you don't want to look at my mop on my head, or you don't want to look at my shaved head for when that happens, Ben, all you got to do is go to your favorite podcast provider. And it's also one of the best ways to win some free Osmo Plus stuff, including a month of Osmo Plus Platinum. All you got to do is leave a 5-star review on the show, talk about my hair, leave your Twitter handle or also Osmo username, and you'll be entered to win a free month for up to a year. So go on and do that and check out our podcasts over there. Now we'll talk about some of these bronze medal guys that I think are going to just fill in the lineups. I don't think any of them have an in-play medal, except for maybe Siwoo Kim, but there's a lot of pressure on him. Start off with Carlos Ortiz, 7,900 this week. I think it's going to be a big sticker shock, given the fact that he doesn't have a top 10 in months. I think it's too pricey. I would rather gamble with one of these Euro Tour players over Carlos Ortiz this week.
I would rather play Munoz blindly over Carlos Ortiz, who's also not going to garner any ownership. So I'm with you. I don't see that. Then you've got Rosner, you've got Detri, Rasmus, who again, at one time Rasmus was like, oh, everyone was all about that. Now, certainly Mito has been, and he's been great. No, fantastic showings. I get it. CT Pan, who apparently gets $1 million bonus if he gets a medal from Taiwan. So
what?
I've been told, yeah.
Any medal?
Yeah.
Oh, now that's some good motivation right there. I mean, that's winning a PGA Tour tournament.
Yeah, that would be very useful.
Man, I'm going to have to dig into that one a little bit. Before we move on, let me ask you a little bit about Munoz. It's a no-cut event, and we see when he makes the cut, the guy can light up the scoreboard. Over 100 at the John Deere Classic, just shy of 100 at the Charles Schwab in terms of DFS points. like you said, blindly play him over Ortiz. Totally agree. Should he actually be a part of your main builds this week? Or do you think there's just better value, say, down the board with even like a Norlander or something like that?
Probably the latter. Just the way you build. It depends how you construct. I haven't built just yet, but I haven't needed visually when I'm thinking about my lineups, a lot of guys in this range, but I don't mind him as a GPP target. Like when you're talking about the $10, he's the type of guy, he can spike 8-10 strokes gained on the approach. He does that. He's a hot putter. He could finish in 32nd and have the 12th most DraftKings points. That's the type of thing that you want. Exactly. And you probably need a lot of risk, of course, but you're not, you know, as we work down, you're not going to find really great plays in terms of no red flags.
Totally agree there. Okay, let's talk about a few more, though, in this range. Antoine Rosner, 78th in the world, playing for the country of France. He's a guy, though, that he's been really consistent. He won the Qatar Masters earlier in the year and then came T15 the next week. Then had a stretch of golf that did not go so well, including a start, two starts over here, missing the cut. But now he's rolled up 5 straight cuts in a row, a couple of majors, a couple of PGA Tour events. I think this guy is a pretty solid play, Ben. And at 7,600, I mean, I don't think it's great. But maybe in a, say, a smaller entry field, I think this guy could help you win it this week.
Yeah, I have no problem with him. Again, price, I'm not going to say it doesn't matter because it obviously does. It's just, you don't have as many targets. There are only a couple guys in each price range. So this is a guy that seems to have some talent, particularly with the irons. Looks like a guy, you know, again, when I think of Corey Connors, Paul Casey types, pure ball strikers, not the best putters. It seems like Rosner is more that than any other build.
Thomas Ditry sits right next to him, and he's kind of the Sebastian Munoz right now of the European Tour. A couple of T2s surrounded by a bunch of missed cuts. Now, the T2s came, one at the Porsche Open, which was a, say, single-digit winner. And then another one came at the Scottish Open, which had a 20-under winner or 19-under, somewhere in that range. So, Ben, is Ditry and Munoz a pair you'd like to go together, or would you only want to play one given their variability?
So, I think if I did use both, I would probably build pretty flat for the other four spots and really try to – you know, smooth it out. And again, you're going to need everyone to play well regardless. I don't know if I'd put like Peters with them and Leash those types. Cause now it's just like, what are the chances that all these wild men, if one guy blows up, you're not going to have enough outs in a 60 man field. And that's something I'd want to be cognizant of. I mean, honestly, in this field, 60 guys to me, 55 to 50 are playable. Like there's only a couple guys where I'm just like, I see absolutely no reason whatsoever to play them.
Talk about Mito Pereira for a second. He's the third of the golfers that are coming over from Blaine, Minnesota. Like I said, we have no idea of their travel plans or how they plan to get there or what have you. But I can tell you that I watched this kid play for a couple of holes in Blaine, Minnesota at the 3M. He's got a great swing. He's a great ball striker, and he's been getting it done on the PGA Tour, back-to-back top 10s, a 6th and a 5th. So the form is undeniable. Maybe definitely a little bit of jet lag coming here this week. It's going to be hard for him not to, but at 7,200, given his recent form, I've got to play him a little bit this week.
Oh, there's nothing about the form, and even though I don't like the circumstance of coming over, the only thing that I'm concerned about is I don't think if you play a little of him, you're going to do much, if anything. I think he's going to be really popular. That's the tricky part. And it's just like, am I going to allocate 30% of my portfolio to Mito? I don't think I can do that. If I can get him in the teens and get over, great. I just don't know if that's going to be possible.
Yeah. A couple of other guys in his range. You already mentioned Hogard. He kind of, you know, was that thing earlier in the season when he ripped off those, you know, back-to-back wins or something close to that. That was kind of out of the COVID break this year. It hasn't been good. I mean, we haven't had a top 10 in quite some time. So this range is a little confusing. Even Matthias Schwab, who you and I have certainly played in the past, his form coming into this, not so great. We do have a top 10 though. And a T11, they're back in the latter part of May. So is that enough for you to click Schwab's name over all of these guys right now, given that his ownership looks like it's going to be less than 10%?
I mean, there's definitely a macro bias, but I am going to play some Schwab. He's a great ball striker. I know it hasn't been great, but I do factor in the fact that if you've been playing leading up to the Open, you've been playing in the Irish and Scottish Open, and then you played at Royal St. George. This is nothing like that. I'm not saying it doesn't matter what you did, but I'm a little more forgiving that maybe Lynx Golf from isn't the best method for a guy like Schwab, and I'm going to forgive that a little bit. I think he's a good GPP target. You mentioned Norlander as a cheapie. I think he makes the most sense of the guys down here at 6,800.
Yeah, and he was part of my top five value video, Henrik Norlander, coming in just good form. I mean, he hasn't missed a cut in a while, had the top five at the John Deere Classic, and he's a ball striker. Everything seems to be rolling for him. Another guy that when you bake in the European Tour strokes gain statistics, Ben, Ryan Fox pops up quite a bit. He was another guy part of my value video this week. Do you think it's too much to pair them both together, both Fox and Norlander? Do you think we're giving up too much upside? Or do you think these guys are in good enough form where we can pair them together?
I think you could look to that. They're not really similar players, and not every lineup has to have all similar players. Ryan Fox is a bomber, but he makes cuts. He knows what he's doing. He can score. I have no problem double dipping in the sixes. I think the problem would be if you double dip in the sixes in the low sixes. To me, that's a recipe for disaster. Maybe one of those guys strikes lightning, and I don't see two sub 65 being effective.
Jazz Jeyanawantanan is here this week for Thailand. Made the cut at the Open. He's just had a weird year. He's the guy that popped at Bethpage a couple of years ago, had the top five at the PGA. Clearly he's got some talent. You can't just place in the top five at the PGA and have no talent. But at 7K, I can't imagine you're going to get there that much with Fox and Norlander right there.
No chance. I'd rather play Rasmus, CT Pan, Schwab, Fox, and Norlander over him. That makes it pretty simple.
And I'm going to guess you'd also include in on Rabban Lahiri from India there, given that you've played him in some PGA events, T3 last time at Barbersol. Maybe this is trending in the right direction. Plus, this guy, he can light it up with the putter. He's a really good GPP target. I love Lahiri this week.
Yeah, he can score. He's really cheap, salary relief, and we just don't know about the scores. Obviously, Lahiri is overmatched when you're talking about the top of the board, but is he overmatched against middle of the road European Tour players? I don't know that, to be honest. And I think that he's very live to score pretty well, and he opens up a lot of builds.
He really does. Plus, if you look at his game log there, now he's got a lot of missed cuts, Ben, but when he makes the weekend, the lowest amount of points he's given you is 71. That's when he came T52 at the Rocket Mortgage. So 71 points for a 6,700 golfer. Again, for the $10 against 80,000 other entries, I think it is this week. Probably not. Say the $500 or the $200 against maybe 3,000 entries. Yeah, I think Lahiri could definitely be in play this week. So we'll talk about that. Okay, a couple more guys. Carl Yuan of the Korn Ferry Tour was a late add to this event, or at least by DraftKings standard. I don't know who he replaced. Maybe DraftKings just missed him at first. He's playing good golf on the Korn Ferry Tour. Three of four cuts with a top 10, another top 20 in there. Put him up against my guy, Audrey Arnoux, who you thought might have been a late add to the event as well. Who would you like to pick? And then I'll give you some stats on Arnoux after you tell me who you'd like to pick out of those two guys. Maybe it's neither.
Right now I don't have a ton of interest in any of these guys, to be honest. These are flyers that we're going to have to look through as we get closer to lock. You've got them. You've got the Finns are down here. There's a pair of Finns. You've got a guy from Zimbabwe, a guy from Paraguay. There's just a lot of names, and I think it gets pretty dicey pretty fast.
Okay, I'll give you the stat on Arnoux now. Maybe it'll excite you, or maybe you'll be like, whoa, that's a bad sign. Okay, first couple of years on tour. In fact, in 2018, he was ranked sixth strokes gain off the tee and inside the top 30 in strokes gain on the approach. That was in 2019. And then the last year, 2020, was kind of weird. They kind of combined those stats. Now this year, flash forward. Oh, sorry, one more thing. Outside of the top 100 in strokes gain putting. Now flash forward to this year. He's sixth strokes gain putting on the European Tour and outside of the top 100 in ball striking in both off the tee and on the approach. So we fixed the putter, but it seems like we've lacked now in the other category. So would you say, okay, the ball striking will come back, That's what he's known for. I'm glad he's a good putter. Maybe it's a great combination for this week, or we focus too much on our putting and we lost our ball striking. Where do you lean there when you see a stat like that?
Yeah, it's always the age old question. Like, you know, people talk about that with Ricky a little. It's like he was always such a good putter. So he starts working on his ball striking, and then he loses his number one asset. I think long term, if you have a body of work that a guy is a good ball striker, I tend to think it'll come back, and it's good to make adjustments. But I do worry a little bit that you don't have an identity anymore. And I think the guys that have had the most success stay true to who they are. You know, we have one element. You just get me to the green and I'll make the putts, or I'm going to dominate off the tee and hopefully I can steal a couple, because I'm never going to be a great putter style.
Yeah, pretty much agree there. I do like him this week at 6,600. I think if he does find that ball striking again and his putter stays hot, it's a good combination for a backdoor top 10, which, again, I know we're talking about medals because it's kind of, you know, how you get paid, quote unquote, you don't get paid for anything here, but it's kind of how you do in the Olympics. But for us, for DFS, I mean, we've got a roster six guys. So it doesn't matter if they come top 10, 15 or whatever at that point, we just need points. So we're getting into the kind of the weeds with these last golfers. A lot of people we probably don't know. A lot of golfers no one's ever seen before. I'll throw two guys out at 6,100 just based off of recent form. It's Hurley Long and Johansson. I'm just going to say Johansson. The guy from Norway that's playing with Hovland. These two guys, Hurley Long and Johansson, have been playing on the Challenge Tour, the Korn Ferry Tour equivalent on the European, and have both been playing really well. So does that intrigue you, given the fact that they've been playing well, albeit on a lesser tour than what these other guys have been on?
I would rather see that than a guy who's just getting absolutely mauled. I still probably think it's a little thin. Hurley Long, I know a little about. He went to Texas Tech and at Oregon, I believe. He's German, had some success on the Challenge Tour. We've seen him in some of the European events, and it hasn't obviously broken through or anything. But you're really playing these guys because you say, all right, I don't see a difference between them and the high sixes, and I can play Morikawa and JT, or Rory and Morikawa, you know, a combination of two guys or three guys up top that really unlocks it. And for me, obviously, you know this, I'll take some stabs with Maximilian Kiefer. I know he's playing so bad. He had two incredible chances early in the year to get his first win, and he couldn't do it. He lost in a horrible playoff to John Catlin. Should have won that. He's got some talent. His form has just really fallen off, and that's why you see him at 6,200.
Yeah, so go Max Kiefer versus Hurley Long, two guys that have been playing on different tours. Country mates, who would you rather pick?
I'm going to go with Kiefer, just because, again, he's certainly more experienced guy. He's much older. He's been through a lot of European Tour events. And, you know, you can say Hurley Long's probably it's not debatable. I think he's the much greater talent. Hurley Long could be someone we see for a long time. Maximilian Kiefer, even though I root for him, you know, I think he's in his 30s, and I'm not sure he's going to have like a resurgence. Maybe he will. Maybe he'll win a gold medal and I'll look like a genius. But I think you want to be careful with these guys. It's mostly for just unlocking those weird permutations.
Okay, speaking of weird permutations, it's lineup building time. So
let's build a couple lineups before we get on out of here.
Lineups here. And for me, if I was doing one lineup, this is kind of how I want us to look at it, Ben. We're going to do one GPP lineup and one main lineup. So we're probably going to avoid the Hurley Long Max Kiefer range, unless we really want to. But based on our talk, I think it's pretty clear that we'll do our GPP lineup first. So the $10. I think you and I both agree that we want to start off a lineup like this with Justin Thomas. Seems like both you and I agree that we'd rather go there instead of Xander. As much as I'm an OG-er of Colin Morikawa, listen, there's been a lot going on. If you look at the starts after his wins, they haven't been good. It's kind of like he, you know, prepares to, you know, get there. He gets there and it's a little bit of regression from there. Justin Thomas hasn't done much recently. So I'll take Justin Thomas as my number one. So with 7,800 left per player, do we want to try and go Joaquin Niemann here? Do you think this is a good spot for both of them? Or is there somebody else you'd like to choose for the number two guy in our lineup here?
No, I'm comfortable with Niemann. So I think that's the next question is, do you double up north of 10K or do you go flat in the nines or do you go extremely balanced with like five guys from 8 to 7? To me, you can do any of them, but I feel like Niemann's a good pairing. We're starting to mold the team right now already of I mean, JT is a, he can play with anyone, but Niemann is the scorer, obviously aggressive off the tee. And I think he's a good second man in.
Okay. So we've kind of looked at guys that maybe are a little bit better on, say, easier tracks.
Yeah.
So this third guy, I'd like to try and go down the board a bit. Who's the most comfortable guy you'd like to put in the lineup here? The name that I have clicked is Lahiri. Is he too aggressive for what we're trying to do? Or do you think he fits what we're trying to do here?
Yeah, again, so this is how I do build. I build by hand. And so now we have an identity. We certainly don't want it to play difficult. We want it to be more with opportunities for birdies. Lahiri's going to make some of his putts, because I don't think he's nearly, I mean, he's just not as good as these other two. But the good thing about that, now we've got 7,700 for these three spots. And that gives us a lot of flexibility. I think we could take someone like a Peters, a pure scorer, someone like that, and put them in there. And again, now we've kind of solidified, all right, we've got a lot of upside. Maybe we smooth that out with these last two and kind of call it an effective lineup.
Okay. So with that being said, is this a spot where you think, because, you know, we didn't go to the higher owned guys up top, we could add in a Johnny Vegas? Or is this a lineup where maybe we want to take a look at Ryan Fox, which would open the door to rostering a bunch of more golfers, given the salary breakout this week?
So I think this is one of the things that I think maybe people get confused at, and this is at least what I believe. When I talk about correlated lineups and themes, I think it's a mistake to have six guys that are the same, because that's just too much of one skill set. So it's like, all right, we've got wild guys. We've got Niemann, Lahiri, and Peters. Those are three crazy. To me, taking five of them is a mistake. And Vegas, to me, is more of a very safe play. He's playing well. He can score. He's kind of priced safely. When you do that, you leave yourself with 7,700 for that last spot, and you've got a lot of options. You can leave money on the table. You can take Munoz or Rosner, and I think that would be unique in its own right. Or you could even take another chalky guy in Mito, but you're leaving 500 on the table, and I think that could alleviate a lot of the ownership dupes.
Me too. If you think Mito is the best play in this range, this is the exact way to get rid of a dupe. So I kind of like that. Let's go with the recent form here, Ben. Let's go with Mito. I think it's a great way to differentiate. You leave that $500 on the table. Sure, I think some people will look and say, well, I can get rid of Lahiri and go to CT Pan and stuff like that. Sure. The likelihood of you bringing a duplicate lineup into play there is higher. Not going to lie, but sometimes that doesn't matter. Sometimes it's okay splitting first place with one other guy or something like that, especially in the $10. So I like this, though. I like the Mito Pereira. So that's our line. Thomas, Niemann, Lahiri, Peters, Vegas, and Pereira. That will be what we call our GPP line. Now we've got about two more minutes. Ben, I don't think something's coming up after us. So we got maybe another minute. Let's build what we consider our main lineup. When we put in a cash game, or when we put in, say, a $500 or larger entry buy-in for this lineup. Is this something where you would like to build, say, the mid-price range, say like Corey Connors, Tommy Fleetwood, start your lineups there and then see who we can get left? Or would you like to put in one of those high price guys first?
So I have no problem doing that. I think when you build, I will say, I do think cash and high stakes are similar, but they are still slightly different because ownership comes into play. And there's a lot that goes into that, as of course, you know. I think I would like to build kind of from the middle, you know, someone like Fleetwood, even to me, Paul Casey, guys, you click them in, and I think there'd still be room for a Rory if you wanted to go up there, or a Hovland, or Shane Lowry, even if you wanted to start in the nines.
Yeah. How do you feel about Sungjae Im here? Do you think let's put him in. So I've got Fleetwood, Casey, and Im, and that's going to give us 7,600 left. We've kind of taken, I would say, a little bit of safety in Fleetwood and Casey. Im is kind of a kind of an oddball and where he can score. I think Sebastian Munoz now gives us a little bit of volatility to the upside here in this lineup, or do you think that's going too far away from the core we're trying to build?
No, I think you're going to need to do it with someone. It doesn't have to be Munoz. There's no doubt about that, but it can be. And now this is where it gets very interesting. So if you do that, you have 76 left. This is where 60 man field comes into play. You don't have that many options. Like, you're going to have to probably find someone either Connors-esque, and then you've got 6,400 left. That's pretty dicey.
Yep.
Or you're looking, I don't know, like nor in the Leishman range. I mean, I kind of defer. Or you could even go, honestly, you could go Mackenzie Hughes if you want.
That's what I looked at. So if we leave in Munoz, and we take out Corey Connors and throw in Mackenzie Hughes, that leaves us with a bunch of options. Well, obviously, some options. From 7,200 to 6,900. I brought up Ryan Fox's name quite a bit. Do you like him as the sixth guy?
So this is a lineup. If again, I'm not going to talk about cash games because that's different. Yeah. If you were playing in a tournament, to me, taking Mito in this lineup would be a mistake. It zeroes out the lineup, and I don't think there's enough there. So this is where I would like to go to either Norlander or Ryan Fox, even CT Pan if you wanted to. Yep. And you change it up, you leave a little money on the table, and that's the type of lineup I think could be very, very effective.
It is, yep. So I'm gonna stay with Ryan Fox. He's a guy that I've kind of highlighted here. Mackenzie Hughes, sure, we could go up to Garrick Higo or Alex Noren. We've already used Peter, so we won't want to do that again. No. Ben, are you cool with Hughes over Higo this week?
I am, particularly in a lineup like this. I think that Higo is more suited for like pure anarchy scoring, Neiman types. This lineup is not that. This is a very methodical build. Good putter with Hughes. Not stable because he can't strike the ball off the tee, but he makes his fair share, of course, because of the putting. And I feel better with that. You've got $300 left on the table. These are just a couple of the many types of builds. Like I said, I don't think these individual lineups you have to tweak with ownership and whatnot, but this is the type of process I think that you can and should go through. And that's why we really recommend signing up, because the tools that Jason and Alex and the whole team provide can help you do this, can show you how much to leverage, ownership, projections, all those things come into play when you're doing this.
For sure. So, all right, we're going to get on out of here. Before we do, I'll give my three medal picks, since it is the Olympics. Yeah. Stay in that fashion. I think it's pretty clear. Both Ben and I think Justin Thomas is your lead guy for the gold medal this week. I think Tommy Fleetwood slides into the silver. I really think that this guy has not done anything this year, and this is a way to write it off. Come home with a medal. Come home to Great Britain or England, wherever you want to go, whatever you want to call it. It is Great Britain this week. That's why Robert McIntyre is not here, because in the Olympics, Great Britain is played. So Scotland and England are played on the same country. Just how it is. Northern Ireland, too, I think gets mixed in there as well. And then Ireland is its own country, obviously, with Shane Lowry playing. Okay, in the bronze medal, let me ask you a question. I would assume that if Sungjae and Siwoo Kim tie for third, they each get a bronze, right? There's no playoff.
I don't know, but I would assume, yeah.
Okay. Well, I don't know if that's going to happen.
Imagine.
I know. I would love that.
Oh, my God. Talk about pressure.
Man. I got Sungjae getting wild. The bronze, though. I got Sungjae getting the bronze. I think he gets it done. I think he would be my pick. He's going to take that avoidance pressure, turn it into opportunity pressure, and make a name for himself here. So those are my three picks. Ben, you're going to be giving yours tomorrow. No, Wednesday. Sorry. It's Monday. I think it's Monday. You're going to be giving them on Wednesday. What time are you going on with Eric for the live before lock?
Yeah, stay tuned for that. We should be going on right before this actually locks. But, you know, with the schedule, awesome. We have so much content. You know, keep your eyes peeled. And listen, this is why you want to subscribe to the channel, because you will get that notification. And it's not just this channel. I do want to say we're doing so much work on the Fantasy Football channel. You can, go right into YouTube, Awesomeo Fantasy Football. An Awesomeo odd sports betting channel. I am working hard over there. The whole team is. We're putting up a ton of content from college football to NFL to the breakfast menu with me and Josh. Just go over there. Give us a sub. We really appreciate it. Like I said, totally free, of course, on YouTube. And you get those notifications. And that's really the most important thing.
On the Awesomeo odd side, by the way, golf may be coming to a season close. But Ben, I've talked to you a lot about this. The swing season for both the European Tour and the PGA Tour provides some awesome betting opportunities. We have nailed a lot of the winners there. What just happens is there's not that many good golfers that play in the fall swing. They're a little bit easier to handicap. So stay tuned for that, because there's some great betting content coming out. Okay, so with that being said, this week it is the Olympics. Next week we get a dual week. I think it'll probably be only one contest, the FedEx St. Jude. Mm-hmm. Then we got the Wyndham, and then it's the playoffs. So it's